Good morning, Dhamma friends. Today I was asked to talk Buddhism, a noble way of life. That was the topic given to me. Buddha says, Dhamma piti sukhang seti. People who enjoy the Dhamma, those who practice the Dhamma, they live peacefully, with peaceful mind and with happiness. So I believe this congregation is a happy congregation and peaceful congregation. Well, some people call Buddhism, it is a religion. Some others say, no, it is a philosophy. Still some others say it is neither a religion nor philosophy, it is a way of life. The beauty and the sweet smell of a rose flower will remain the same, whatever the name that you call it, exactly in the same manner. Buddhism will remain as what it is, whatever the label that you give it. You can call it a religion because it has got religious elements in it. But if you call Buddhism as a religion with a specific meaning that it binds to the God, because the term religion itself comes from the concept that there is somebody above you sitting in judgment and over the destiny of the humankind and who can control the human beings and bind into that supernatural being or supernatural force. And in that sense, they believe religion. But if you want to call Buddhism with that specific meaning, Buddhism is not a religion then. But Buddhism can be called as a religion with a specific meaning that its devotional practices, ceremonies, rites and rituals, and it practice to lead to spiritual cultivation. With that sense, yes, you can call it a religion, but not with a specific meaning that has something to do with the God or some supernatural beings who are or the supremacy of the humankind. We do not believe such a thing. Some people call Buddhism is a philosophy. Well, it is a philosophy, but again, it is not a dry philosophy. Most of the time, philosophy, there is a beautiful ideal, but utopia cannot be lived there. But when it comes to Buddhist philosophy is something that you have to verify and test it by yourself and you have to live in it. So it is not a dry philosophy in that sense. Well, some others call Buddhism is a way of life. If you call Buddhism it's a way of life with a specific meaning that it encourages moral way of living, then not only Buddhism but all the other religions are also way of life also, because each and every religion basically agree and teach to uphold righteous principles. There can be differences, but basically we agreed upon that human beings should lead a moral life. So with that sense, if you want to call Buddhism a way of life, I would say we are not giving due credit to Buddhism, because that is the base for Buddhism. Upholding righteous principles and living moral life is only basic for the Buddhism. So Buddhism is a way of life in its perfect sense, that it leads to perfect, pure, noble, enlightened human state of, which is known as enlightenment. So in that sense, we can call Buddhism a way of life. Buddha himself called his teaching as Dhamma Vinaya, doctrine and discipline, or theory or practice, whatever you want to call. So Buddha's own terms are Dhamma Vinaya, doctrine and discipline. The noble life the Buddha proclaimed is the culmination of great compassion and the wisdom, karuna and panya. So Buddha says, human beings, we have got potentials, capacities, capabilities and abilities to become enlightened, to develop this human mind to the maximum level. So the pinnacle of the human mind, the maximum development of the human mind, which is termed as enlightenment, is culmination of great wisdom and great compassion. And here again, great compassion and great wisdom comprise the qualities of the heart and the qualities of the brain. The compassion, that is a term that we call or we use to, for all the great virtuous qualities that human beings can cultivate to the maximum level, and that comes under compassion. Now, on the other hand, the wisdom, that is the qualities of the brain, here intelligence, understanding, and all these qualities which are related with the human intelligence, that is known as wisdom. So culmination of these two is nothing but enlightenment. To achieve that perfect level, which is the noble state, the human beings who take this path, the teachings of the Buddha, and they live in a way to become noble, so it is called a noble way of life. In order to complete this noble state, there are three steps that should go in hand. Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Understanding, practice, and realization. So understanding is the first stage and most basic. Here it is understanding of the teachings of the Buddha. Then why do we have to understand it? Understanding is not good enough, but unless you practice it. So understanding leads to practice. Then again, what is the purpose of practice? That is to realize this teaching. So the realization, so culmination of great compassion and wisdom, as I told you early, that is the noble state. So all the Buddhist practices leads to this end, the realization of Nibbana. So Buddhism is a noble way of life in that sense. Yes. Buddha says, there's nothing comparable with the human minds. One day he addressed the monks and said, Naham bhikkave eka dhammang samanupassam yataidang chittang. Monks, I do not see anything, any other power, which can overcome the power of the human mind. Human mind has got so much capacities, capabilities, abilities. In fact, Buddhism recognizes human mind is full of a lot of rubbish, at the same time, full of a lot of gems, treasure house. It is up to you to decide to increase the rubbish or clean it up, or decrease and or diminish. The Buddha's path, why it is known it as a noble way? Because all the Buddhist practices leads to eliminate, eradicate, reduce, suppress, weaken these rubbish. The rubbish is a term for defilements, greed, hatred, ill will, jealousy, anger, cruelty. These are some of them. When we are motivated by these defilements, then we become ignoble, outcasted. But on the other hand, the noble qualities of the human mind, when you uphold them, compassion, goodwill, friendship, generosity, so on and so forth, we become noble individuals. So Buddha, having understood, he said, Najaccha vasa lohoti, najaccha hoti brahmano. Someone doesn't become an outcast or noble individuals by birth, but kamana vasa lohoti, kamana hoti brahmano. By action, by way of life, someone become noble or ignoble, outcast or higher class. So Buddhism, by upholding these noble qualities and encouraging human beings to uphold these noble qualities, Buddhism proves itself as a noble way of life. Then again, when it comes to the base nature of all the living beings in the world, Buddhism recognizes the base of all the living beings, the innate nature of all the living beings, is greed, hatred, and delusion. Of course, these three, even though we count as three, but there are secondary type of thousands of other defilements come out from these three. But these three are equal for humankind, animal kind, as well as other living beings, even for the divine beings. No one is free from these three defilements as long as someone is not enlightened. So the human beings and animals and divine beings, we share these three, so it is known as three basic nature of the mind. But what makes us different from animals? Animals, they behave based on these three. But the human beings, we have got option. By overcoming these three, we can cultivate opposite qualities, which Buddha encouraged. Instead of greed, Buddhism encouraged generosity, open-minded, sharing and caring. Instead of hatred, Buddhism encourages loving-kindness, compassion, goodwill, friendship. Instead of delusion, Buddhism encourages understanding, intelligence, and wisdom. That is why Buddhism is a noble way of life. And it's only through cultivation that one can become a noble human being in the society. Well, Buddha says, Santoso Bhagava Samataya Dhammang Deseti. The Buddha, having achieved perfect peace, he teaches the Dhamma for the purpose of achieving the peace. Buddhism is a peaceful teaching. From the right beginning to the end, it encourages nothing but peace. Those individuals who uphold the peace in the society, they are noble individuals in the society. Buddhism never encouraged violence in any rate or under whatsoever conditions. It's all the way encouraged peace. Maybe some of you who read the life story of the Buddha, remember, once after he passed away, his bodily particles were collected by Malava kings, and they wanted to possess this by themselves. But there were many other kingdoms, and the kings who were followers of the Buddha, they took claim, well, Buddha is our teacher too, so we need the relics. In this way, in that ancient time, eight kings came forward and claimed the relics. Since nobody could settle the matter, they were ready to go for the war just to possess the relics. Then there was one wise Brahmin. And he addressed these kings and said, "The lords, let me utter one single word." What did he say? "Remember, Buddha is the peaceful person. He taught the peace." That much was enough for these people to settle down, and the relics were divided among the kingdoms. So Buddha is said, "Santoso Bhagava Samataya Dhammang Desiti." Having achieved perfect peace, he teaches the other human beings the way how to achieve perfect peace. That is the noble way. Well, how does the Buddha encourage peace? As long as the coarse roots of violence remains in human mind, the peace is impossible to achieve. So Buddha teach the ways and techniques to reduce these violent roots in the human mind. As long as hatred is there, we always become violent. So he teach metta meditation, encourage followers to cultivate metta, boundless love. Then you become peaceful, loving, caring human being. Well, here we can see many religions too, of course, talk about love. But there are some limits. Some religions may say, love your fellow brothers and sisters, and they belong to their religious brotherhood. So for them, it is all right to kill those who are not belong to their religions, and the infidels or those who are not believe can be destroyed, can be killed. So their love has got a limit. Some others can go to the extent far beyond and extend their love and say, love all the human beings. But still there can be a limit. They will exclude the animals. And then the animals can be slaughtered or tortured or used for any other purpose. That's perfectly okay. But when it comes to Buddhism, when Buddha encouraged love, there's no any discriminations among humankind or animal kind or any other living beings whatsoever. So Buddha says, radiate boundless love and compassion to all the living beings without any barrier. So Buddha, by encouraging this perfect quality of loving kindness, reduce, weaken the cause root of violence, which is hatred in human mind, and encourage peace in the society. That is why it is a noble way of life. As long as jealousy remains in the human mind, then again we can go to the extent of violent activities. So to reduce the jealousy in human mind, Buddha encouraged appreciative joy, another type of meditation. And we are supposed to develop this noble quality of appreciative joy to encourage peace in the society. As long as cruelty is human mind, then again there's no peace. Violence can break out. So Buddha encouraged compassion, another type of meditation technique, that is to reduce cruelty in human mind and encourage peace in that way. Then again, as long as we discriminate, we divide into groups, and we discriminate each other, then there's no peace again. So Buddha encouraged perfect equanimity, equally radiate love, compassion, and appreciative joy towards all the human beings and towards all the other animals and other living beings, those seen, unseen. So in this way, friends, from all the way, Buddha encouraged peace in human society. That is why it is a noble life. Again, Buddhism recognizes as long as greed, hatred, and delusion, these three are rooted in the human mind, the perfect peace cannot be achieved. By cultivating meditation of loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, equanimity, yes, we can achieve peace to a great extent, but the root cause are still remaining in the human mind. So uprooting these cause root, eradicating them perfectly, permanently, and irreversibly, we can achieve perfect peace, which is the Nibbana. So that is the meaning when it is said, Buddha, having achieved peace, perfect peace, he teach the Dhamma for other human beings to achieve peace. And again it is said, Santoso Bhagava, Dantoso Bhagava, Dhammataya Dhammandeseti. Here Danto means taming and calming. So means Buddha having calmed, having tamed himself, he teach the Dhamma to other human beings to tame themselves. So Buddha is known as incomparable trainer of human beings. But before he become incomparable trainer of human beings, he trained and tamed himself. We have got five sense faculties. Our eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. These five sense faculties are to be tamed, are to be well disciplined. So when you discipline your eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, and well disciplined, you will be called a gentleman. Or you are civilized human being. Or you are upholding righteous principles. So when it comes to morality, what means you tame, you calm down, or you train your five faculties in order to become a noble human being, a moral human being, or somebody who upholds moral qualities. So Buddha's teachings, in the first place, encourage human beings to become noble by upholding righteous principles. But still, in the second level, even though we control our five sense faculties, in our mind still arise hatred, ill will, jealousy, anger, cruelty, all these defilements arise. Lust, attachment, craving, so on and so forth. Then, even though we control our five sense faculties, in human mind, it still remains this cause root. So Buddha encouraged in second level, meditation, samadhi, mental culture. And here we are calming down them, taming down them, training our human mind to become more noble. Then again, third stage, by eradicating all these defilements from the human mind, we can achieve perfect training. So these are the three steps of a Noble Eightfold Path. Morality, mental concentration, and the wisdom. Wisdom can be achieved only by eradicating the defilements. So in this way, Buddha teaches the Dhamma for the sake of taming and calming. Then once we complete this, we become well-trained human beings, well-calmed human beings, well-tamed. Here, well-tamed means having seen through our eye a pleasurable, favorable object, we will not produce lust, greed, attachment. In that way, we will remain peace and calm and tame. Having seen someone or something unfavorable, the anger, hatred, ill will, jealousy will not invade our mind. We still remain peaceful, calm, and tame. Exactly in the same manner through all the other sense faculties. Two, we will remain as calm, serene, peaceful human being. That is why Buddha's path leads to a noble way of life. Bodhoso Bhagava Bodhaya Dhammang Deseti. The Buddha, having realized, having achieved perfect understanding, he teach the Dhamma for other human beings to lead to perfect understanding, the realization. Here, how does Buddha teach the Dhamma for the others to achieve perfect understanding and what we should understand? And Buddha says, all the human beings and other living beings, no matter whatever you are, all the living beings, they do not like to be tortured. They do not like to be harmed. They like to live peacefully. So Buddha says, do not harm, do not injure, or do not kill other living beings. Why it is so? Sabbe tasanti dandasya, sabbe bhayanti machino. All the living beings are fear towards the violence and death. Attanang upamankatta nahane yanagate. Having understood this, one should refrain from doing those violent things. So this is what we have to understand. So Buddha understands all the living beings, they fear towards punishment and death. Then having understood it, we refrain doing it. Then he said, Sukha kamani bhutani. All the living beings, they like to be happy. Having understood it, we should treat our fellow brothers and sisters and other living beings. Having understood that everybody likes to be happy, the way that the others be happy. We should not bring any kind of miseries to other living beings. So in the first place, when we understand all the living beings, no matter whatever our status in the human society, we have our own portion of miseries. We have our own problems, calamities, miseries in our life. Each and everyone, whether you are rich or poor, or educated or not educated, whether you are having this or that, regardless of all these, each and every human being has got his or her own portion of miseries. So having understood this common nature, we should be compassionate towards all the living beings. And having understood that all the living beings are seeking after happiness, we should enjoy the happiness of the others. So this understanding again leads to peace in the society. That is why it is a noble way of life. And again it is said, when Buddha says that having understood, he teaches the other human beings for the purpose of understanding, he means all the conditioned things in this universe. They are in constant flux. They are rising and passing away, rising and passing away. All the things in the world, all the conditioned things, anicca, in a changing state. Having understood it, we should look into our body and mind and understand the changing nature. We have to look outside the world and have to understand this nature. Then attachment to all these change in nature will produce unsatisfactoriness in final analysis, in long run. So whatever the attachment that we are having, and no doubt it can produce temporary happiness, but in long term it can produce unhappiness, sorrow, lamentation, pain. And this is to be understood. Having understood it, we should live wisely. We should try to reduce the attachment and finally to eradicate it. Then we have to understand this so-called human being is nothing but combination of forces and energies. And these energies are in a constant flux in the process of arising and passing away. When you understand it, we let go the egoism, reduce egoism, and then we become open-minded, broader-minded. These are the three things are to be understood in deepest level, which is the Nibbana, which is the enlightenment stage again. So when we understand this nature, in that sense, we become again peaceful. We become enlightened. We become compassionate towards our fellow brothers and sisters and other living beings. That is why it is called a noble way of life. Parinibbuto so bhagava parinibbanaya dhamman desiti. Buddha, having eradicated all the defilements, and he teach the Dhamma for the purpose of eradicating of all the defilements. The Buddha is the perfect, pure embodiment of the purity of human mind. So the enlightened beings, they are known as pure and ever peaceful, compassionate beings. Pure in the sense that their mind has no any defects of any type of defilements. They have eradicated all the defilements perfectly, permanently, and irreversibly, and achieve perfect purity. And again, they have cultivated all the noble qualities, and these noble qualities comes under the one single label called compassion. And they have cultivated all the intelligence and understanding, and all these come this the another label called wisdom. So enlightened beings, they are full of compassion, full of perfect purity, and full of wisdom. So they are like lotuses. Buddha says, Yata sankara dhanasmin ujjitasmin mahapate padumantas jahayete suchi ganda manorama. Says, in a heap of rubbish, in a dirty place, like in a pool, where a lot of dirty things are there, there can arise a lotus flower. Suchi ganda manorama. Full of beauty and full of sweet smell. And this lotus flower can remain there in this rubbish heap, in this muddy pool, without touching with the mud, in perfect pure sense. Evaṃ saṅkhāra bhūtesu andha bhūte putujjane. Exactly in the same manner, among countless living beings, among humankind, there arise enlightened human beings. And they are the ones atirochati paññāya sammā sambuddhassa sāvako. These are the noble enlightened disciples of the Buddha who excels the others, shine forth in wisdom and compassion. So the enlightened human beings, they are like lotuses. So the way that we leads to achieve that perfect purity is known as the way of noble life. This way, this path which leads to this noble state is the noble eightfold path. That is the Buddhist way of life. And those people who followed this path and achieved perfect enlightenment, perfect purity, perfect peace, and these are known as noble human beings. And these noble human beings are the ones combined together, and we worship them as third jewel. What is it? Sangha. Sangang saranang gacchami. I go to the refuge of the Sangha. So when it is Sangha here, remember, not only monks and nuns, but also the lay people who ever enlightened, they all comes as noble Sangha. So a while ago, all of you recited, Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Did you? What does it mean? The noble disciples of the Buddha, they have entered Supatipanna, good path. What is this good path? This is the noble eightfold path, which is good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. Why this path is good in the beginning? Because Noble Eightfold Path, in the first place, it teaches morality, upholding righteous principle. That is why it is good in the beginning. Why it is good in the middle? Because in the second phase, it teaches the mental development, calming down, taming down your mind, reducing the defilements. And why it is known as good at the end? Because in the third stage, it teaches you to eradicate all these defilements and achieve perfect purity in the human mind. That is what it means by Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. The noble disciples of the Buddha, they have entered the good path, the Noble Eightfold Path, which is good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. You also recited this. What does it mean? The noble enlightened disciples of the Buddha, they have entered a straight path. What does it mean, straight path? The path that Buddha proclaimed, this path leads towards the enlightenment, towards the peace, towards the eradication of all the defilement. So it is one-way path. So whoever practice Buddhism, and they will end up being enlightened. If a cruel human being were to start practicing Buddhism in time to come, this human being will turn up to become compassionate human being. If ignorant human being were to practice this path in time to come, will become understanding, intelligent, enlightened human beings. If stingy human beings were to start practicing this path in time to come, that human being will turn up to become generous, open-hearted, a human being. So in this way, friends, this is the path that leads from dark to light, from light to light. That is why it is said, this path, straight path, leads to peace, perfect cessation, perfect happiness, perfect bliss, enlightenment to the wisdom. Samichi patipanno bhagavato, nyaya patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. I guess you also recited this. Nyaya patipanno. Here nyaya means the knowledge. The path, the Noble Eightfold Path here leads to perfect knowledge, perfect realization. Whoever follow this path end up being realizing the perfect truth in this universe. And that truth is termed as Nibbana. Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangha. The noble disciples of the Buddha, they have entered to the path which leads to perfect peace. Samichi patipanno. So friends, when we consider all these factors, what we can say, Buddhism is a noble way, a path, a way of life. But not with the narrow sense that it encourages the morality, because morality is of course the basic. So if you say Buddhism is a way of life with a specific sense, with a narrow sense, like it encourages morality, we do not give the due credits to Buddhism. But we say Buddhism is a noble way of life, it is because in the first place it encourages noble way of life by upholding righteous principles, which is Sila in Noble Eightfold Path. In second stage, it encouraged noble mind by reducing, weakening the defilements in human mind by cultivating meditation, then become noble individuals in the second stage. Then the third stage, by eradicating the defilements perfectly, permanently, irreversibly, then becoming noble individuals in the society. So in these three stages, Buddhism encourage noble way of life. So it is perfectly all right to call Buddhism is a noble way of life with this broader spectrum, with this understanding. So I think this much is enough as a talk. And if you have got any question, maybe we can spend this for Q&A session.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So is there any questions from the floor? Free questions, quality answers.
Yeah, thank you, Venerable, for the enlightening talk. I've got two questions, one related to what you say, and one is not. The one related to your talk is, you mentioned that the human beings and animals share the traits of greed, hatred, and delusion. From my understanding and observation, animals, especially those animals in the wild, do not quite exhibit these three traits, meaning that when you talk of greed, actually it's not so much greed, but they just hunger, they're going to eat. Hatred, I don't think animals hate one another, they just protect their territory only. And delusion, the animals, not like human beings, think that the sun is a god, so I pray to the god, but the animals don't say, oh, there's a god, I must pray to the god. So that much, I say that it might not be the case. That's the first question. Huh? The second question, not so related, is that in near
can
death...
Can we go one by one?
Okay, sorry.
Yes, I agree with you. Only with superficial level. I perfectly agree with you with what you said, the difference between animals and their nature and human beings, only in superficial level. But in deepest level, that's different from the Buddhist point of view. In deepest level, it is ignorance, avijja, is the cause of all this conditioning. So if you analyze condition genesis, the interdependent nature, interdependent coexistence, the doctrine of the Buddha, it is said, avijja paccaya sankhara. Because of ignorance arise condition. So here, the delusion or avijja is in fact the cause root of greed and hatred. When it comes to animals and human beings, what makes us different from the animals in the first place is our intelligence level. So, our intelligence, we are more intelligent than them. Of course, that is why we develop. That is how we conquer the earth. We are not birds, but we can fly better than the eagles. We are not fish, but we can swim better than the dolphins. We have conquered the earth. We have conquered the sea. We have conquered the whole planet and all the other planets too. We are going to conquer outer space because of the intelligence. So we have got the innate capacity to produce intelligent wisdom, understanding instead of delusion. But because of this, we can develop, instead of hatred, we can develop loving kindness, compassion, goodwill, all these qualities. Instead of greed, we can develop generosity, sharing and caring, all these opposite qualities. But when it comes to animals, the animals, they are more deluded and they are motivated by greed, hatred and delusion. And you can call it instinct. As some people like to call it, animal's instinct. Yes, when another animals come to their territory, we fight. And he fight and protect it. Don't human beings do it? We too do it. Don't you think we do it? We do it. So human beings too do it. Animals too do it. When we hungry, we kill and eat. We also do it. Not only animals. But well, take this example, a tiger. A tiger, when he's hungry, he kills another living being and eats. It is his animal instinct. And he is born in that state and he doesn't have a choice. Can you expect a tiger to become vegetarian? But human beings, this is the difference. Human beings, we are different, yes. I'm hungry, but I can have a choice not to kill, but I still survive. And this is given because of our intelligence, compassion, goodwill, whatever the, our innate ability to develop towards opposite side. So human realm and animal realms, these human beings and animal beings, we are moving from one life to another life in this cycle of existence. Animals are our fellow brothers and sisters, remember, from the Buddhist point of view, because we share the same destiny. And once someone is born as animals, it's because of their past negative karma, the karmic energy, and they are born in that condition, they produce more and more and more dark karmic energy. That is why it is said, once after you are born as an animal, it's very, very difficult for you to come out it, because simply you are producing more and more negative dark karmic energy. That is the difference between human being and animal. That is why the Buddha says, Kicho manusya patilabo, rare is this precious human life. And we are all fortunate to be born as human beings. Remember, Buddhism upholds this view that by birth, all the human beings, regardless whether you are moral or immoral now, by birth, all the human beings are virtuous and lucky and fortunate. It is because of this simple reason. So animals and human beings, we share greed, hatred, and delusion. But the animals, they are motivated by these three and they don't have a choice. And they will go accordingly. But human beings, though we are motivated by these three, we can suppress and weaken and produce opposite qualities. Instead of hatred, we can produce loving kindness, compassion, goodwill. Instead of greed, we can produce generosity, we can be open heart. And instead of delusion, we can be intelligent and wise. In this way, friends, we have a better choice. So in the deeper sense, in the superficial level, even though it look in this way, in the deeper sense, in fact, it is the delusion that condition us to these two different states.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. Second question is totally related is the near-death experience. A lot of this has been documented, near-death experience. Usually, it comes from a very sick body and then they go into this near-death and then come back totally healed. So from the Buddhist perspective, how do you explain this already dead person, so to speak, from a medical point of view, and that go into another realm? If they are, according to their religious inclination, they will see that vision of Christ, if you're a Christian, Buddha, if you're a Buddhist, and so on, and then come back totally healed. So how do you explain that from the Buddhist perspective?
Unfortunately, I do not have that experience of near-death experience, you see. How many bodies do you have? How many bodies do you have? Only one body? You belong to one body. What about your husband's and wife's body? Not belongs to you. Well, when I said, how many bodies do you have? I mean something else. In fact, it's very common and understood we have got only one body, correct? This is physical body. But from the Buddhist point of view, we are talking about three types of bodies. There's a very interesting discourse in Digha Nikaya. It's worthy to read. The name of this discourse is Pottapada. If I'm not wrong, it is 32. The sutta number 32. Here, there is a dialogue between the Buddha and one learned Brahmin called Pottapada. And I'm not going to relate all this story to you, but simply, here in this dialogue, the Buddha says to Pottapada, he says, Pottapada, we have three types of bodies. One type of body is known as Olarika Attabhava, gross level physical body. And that is what we all recognize. And it can be touched, it is hard, and we can occupy the space. And the scientists have done a lot of experiments about this body. This is the physical body. Buddha says, within this physical body, there is another body known as Manomaya Attabhava, which is the mind-made astral body. Then Buddha further says, there's another body called Sanyamaya Attabhava, means mind, the Sanyamaya Attabhava here means a body without physical or mental, but a kind of existence. But that is beyond of our discussion here, Sanyamaya Attabhava. Here it's important for our discussion, the first two type of body. Gross level physical body and subtle level astral body. Buddha says, if someone were to develop mind through meditation technique and achieve the psychic abilities, those human beings get the ability to separate this physical body and the astral body, and we can send this astral body far and far and far away to any other place on this planet or even beyond to outer space. And it can be done by achieving this ability. That is what the Buddha says. And he gives some examples to show this. He says, metaphors. He says, like someone take out a sword from its case and recognize this is the sword and this is its case. Exactly in the same manner, those human beings who have got this ability, they will recognize this is the physical body and this is the astral body. And we come across many places in the Sutta Pitaka, where Buddha used this, the second type of astral body, to appear some other places while he is sitting in meditation in his room. Especially, there are cases while sitting in his room in with the physical body, using his psychic abilities, it is said he has appeared in front of many others, but still preach and talk the others can hear. But these are beyond of ordinary understanding. Whether you accept or not, that's a different case. And there are monks also who achieve this ability. And not only among the Buddhists. In the Western culture also, we come across those stories about space traveling with astral bodies, with ancient cultures. Whatever all these are also worthy to reflect upon. Nowadays, we come across near-death experience. And many such stories explain some special incidents like some individual faced with an accident. And later on, they say, well, I saw my body was carried to the hospital by so-and-so-and-so, and the doctors did the surgery. I was watching over all these things. And after they gained the consciousness, came back to life, they reported all these incidents. And that was the mystery. The doctors were interested to know, how did this patient come to know all these informations? And that is how the doctors started to do the experiments. As you said, there are many such kind of books were written. So here these people, when they talk near-death experiences, our relevance to Buddhism is here. These people at that particular moment, they are experiencing all these things through their astral body. And Buddhism recognizes by developing the psychic abilities, you can separate these two bodies and experience outer space or outer world. But there can be certain occasions, even ordinary human beings, they experience this astral body. So near-death experience belong to this category. And today, scientists, they also recognize this body in a different way. Some people, they like to call it bioplasma body or astral body or aura or whatever. And whenever these pieces of information comes, we can relate it into the astral body or manokaya in Buddhism. And that is, in fact, it's not a mystery for Buddhists. And in fact, it is accepted. And it is possible from the Buddhist point of view. And someone experience this and then they come back to the life and they relate these stories. But of course, there are incidents where people say after the death and especially in cardiac the arrest or whatever, I mean, when they, what is it called? It's not a brain death when their heartbeat is stopped for a while and the doctors recognize they are in fact dead, but immediately they come back to the life, and here still the experiments are going on. And some people, yes, they say they happen to see the Buddha or the God or the heaven, all these, a lot of stories are going on. To verify all these stories, we do not have such kind of supernatural powers. And this much can be said from the Buddhist point of view. It is possible for someone to experience something beyond of these five sense faculties, beyond the limit of the physical body. We can experience certain things through the astral body. And that is possible.
All right. I think we maybe one short questions because we need to let the venerable to have his meal.
Hi, venerable. I have a question here. If the Buddha teaches us compassion, peace, and one of the five precepts is abstain from killings, I want to know why are those Myanmar monks currently, I know there's a religious conflict, why are those monks still killing, perform this these acts of killing?
You mean that some monks engaged in killing?
I think in Myanmar there's a religious conflict. So I read in the news the monks are also killings.
You mean monks are killing, is it?
Yeah, Buddhist monk in Myanmar.
Okay. When a monk or a nun behave in such a way that is nothing wrong with the Buddha or nothing wrong with the Buddha's teaching or something is wrong with the individuals. Buddha, yes. He teaches the Dhamma for the purpose of peace. And the Buddha's teaching is noble. And as long as we follow this teaching, we become peaceful and noble. Just because we wear the robe, shaved off, someone doesn't become a monk or nun. This is just a uniform. As the Buddha himself says, no one becomes noble or ignoble by birth, but by practice. So whether killing is done by a monk or a nun or a lay person, for this reason or that reason, it is still, from the Buddhist point of view, it is breaking the first precepts. So if a monk or nun were to do that, and they have committed this breaking of these precepts, and there's no any argument about it, there's nothing to hide about it. And that is against, that's it. Against the teachings of the Buddha. So what is your question? Why are they still killing? In fact, I cannot answer for this. These are for the sake of power. For the sake of power, we will kill each other because of greed, because of hatred, because of delusion. We kill. Why are they killing? It is because of greed, because of hatred, because of delusion. Religion is used all the way in human history to achieve power, to achieve economic power and political power. Religion is being used, and even today, religion is being used to make money, to achieve wealth, and to achieve the political power. And it will be used in the future too, in the future as well, for this purpose. So whether it is Buddhism, Christianity, or Islam, or Hinduism, or some other religions, without religious labels, religion is used to achieve political power and economic power. And there is this struggle. Okay, so whether it happens in Myanmar or any other part of the world, under the label of Buddhism or any other label, it is because of greed, hatred, and delusion. But remember this much. Buddhism never encouraged whatsoever violence. It's always peaceful. And always uphold righteous principles. Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, triple gems, always noble and pure. When it is said Sangha here, remember again, Sangha means the enlightened monks, nuns, and enlightened female and male followers of the Buddha. So all the enlightened human beings are belong to the noble Sangha. So as long as we are not enlightened, we are ordinary. So the monks like me, we belong to ordinary Sangha, not noble Sangha. So you can expect defects from me. Don't expect the behavior of the noble enlightened monks.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.